Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Our guest today is the author of a recently published book, Corruption and Hypocrisy in Malay Muslim Politics, The Urgency of Moral Ethical Transformation. Emeritus Professor Tan Sri Muhammad Kamal Hassan joins us today. He, in 1999, was appointed the third rector of International Islamic University, Malaysia IIUM, and he was the first person to hold the Malaysia Chair for Islam in Southeast Asia at the Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Professor Kamal, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join us.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Okay, I'm going to jump right into the book because in it you wrote, and if I may quote it, political corruption and hypocrisy in Malay Muslim political culture and behavior are currently at levels, at the lowest levels in Malaysian history, end quote. And you've said that this is, for you, the most frustrating phenomenon as a citizen. I'm wondering whether you can begin our conversation today by elaborating on the impetus for you to write and to publish this book now.
Thank you very much, Melissa, and also Sharad, for giving me the honor to be interviewed on the, Consider This program. This is the first time for me. And also I wish to thank Astra Awani for deciding to also highlight my book, which has just come out. Now, as you rightly said, that one of the reasons why I decided to write was that at the age of 79 and going into 80, I have never written anything about politics in Malaysia. And I feel that my time is about to end in this world, and I may have to return to Allah soon. But the political scenario is most frustrating, especially, you know, I've been observing the political developments in the country for the last seven decades. And I feel that things are getting worse. And this is really very, very frustrating, very disgusting at times, and appalling as well. And then I realized I'm not the only person. There have been many other intellectuals and intelligentsia, Muslims as well as non-Muslims, expressing their dismay with the corruption and the hypocrisy in politics. And I, of course, I decided to focus on the Malay politics because I don't know much about the non-Malay politics. So that is one factor, the age factor. And the second is that the phenomenon is to me so well entrenched, it has become cancerous, and maybe it is at the terminal stage. And so I thought that I have to do something, at least theoretically, to bring about a thorough, a complete transformation of the political culture of Malay politics. So that basically, those are the two factors which have led me to the writing of this first ever book written by me on Malay politics.
Well, Professor Kamal, as you rightly point out, corruption and hypocrisy are not the monopoly of Malay politicians or Malay society. This is a worldwide phenomenon, but and in this country also. But I wonder if the salience of addressing the Malay polity, Malay society in your book, comes from the fact that there is an entrenched view that Malay politics and society must dominate the federation, that Malay society and culture, its language, its religion is in fact core to the identity of the nation. And therefore, a transformation of Malay society might lead to a larger transformation. Is that in many ways part of the problem? The Ketuanan Melayu is part of the corrupting influence of modern Malaysia.
Yes, I think I would agree with you, Sharad. In fact, this is also part of the problem of Malay nationalism and the expectations of Malay nationalists ever since they came into power with a certain agenda which was meant to uplift the economic position of the Malays. But they failed to manage the post-independence political developments with the big economic transformation, the new economic policy privilege for the Malays and so on, and without the restraining force of ethics and sound religious values, Malay leaders became more corrupt. And then with the development of patronage politics, I think patronage politics is one of the greatest factors that led to this entrenched culture of corruption.
Right. Well, I think it's really interesting because, you know, one of the things you brought in the book was political corruption and bribery are used in the name of preserving of a demi bangsa agama dan negara, right? Used for the preservation of an ethnic community's interest. And I just wonder, how do we best understand this, the Machiavellian doctrine of the ends justifies the means, because as you wrote, to quote you, the stakes are too high to bother thinking about upholding the principles of integrity, ethics, or even legality.
Yes, I think this happens because at some point in the development of the nationalist political thought, Malay nationalist political thought, there is a disconnect between political goals and religious and ethical values. So all those demi bangsa, demi negara and all that are being used to justify certain actions which favor, you know, the Malays. And the religion was not really regarded highly by the Malay nationalists. Bear in mind, Melissa, the Malay nationalists were largely secular oriented, westernized elites, some of them with royal background, but highly anglicized, you know. And so this this group of Malay nationalists inherited the independence from the British, but the model that they were following were in fact indirectly was a British model, separation of religion from politics and so on. So I think that has led to this crisis that we are now witnessing.
Professor, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that you are a student of William Roth, the author of The Origins of Malay Nationalism.
Yeah, of course. How do you know that, Sharad?
Okay, little bird told me. Let me just put this to you, though.
I remember Bill Roth very fondly, he and his wife.
Yeah. Margaret Clark.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah. I want to ask you... I'd like to focus on what you consider the restraining forces, right? You say nationalism, they're unrestrained by religion. But we see, and I think this might be counterintuitive for a lot of our listeners, because religion has played a huge part in the legitimizing, structures of Malay nationalism. The iconography of Malay nationalism, and as Melissa pointed out, the slogans that produced the vast amounts of money that's spent on building an Islamic bureaucracy. The university that you once led also part of this grand plan. So in what sense was religion, in fact, the handmaiden to the corrupt order that we see today?
Sharad and Melissa, you have Islam in two dimensions. The popular Islam is what I would consider the misunderstood Islam. And there is Islam of the book. And I want them to go back to the book, which takes you away from racism, ethnic consciousness and ketuanan and all that, and considers the whole of humanity as Bani Adam, as the sons of Adam. We are all equal before God, and that the aim of politics is not power, but to deliver, to take care of the welfare of the people, and that political leadership is not a privilege, but a responsibility to God. Now, that dimension of Islamic worldview, I'm sorry to say, Sharad, is missing. So you get the popular images of Islam, what in Malay is called some aspects of the Sharia. You know, these are the observable aspects of Islam. But what is the transcendent, the spiritual and the ethical, sadly missing.
Right.
All over the world.
On that note about the ethical, and I think it's very interesting that you almost, I think you the perspective of the book is not just about corruption, which we all know about corruption. It's more than just, you know, money changing hands and misuse of entrusted power. But you also talked about hypocrisy. And I think that that is a very interesting dimension to explore in Malaysia, political deception and hypocrisy, the practice of saying one thing in public but doing something else in private. And that happens a lot in Malaysian politics, particularly in political Islam, with Islamic principles used in political rhetoric to win populist support. Is that something that you've seen being increasingly used, and how do we, as you say, reset from that political hypocrisy?
Yes, indeed. I've been observing this double standards and speaking one thing in public and another in private, not fulfilling your promises, you know, giving all kinds of promises, but that not of all these things are aspects of hypocrisy, but nationalist leaders are used to this kind of thing because that seems to be universally practiced. Political scientists maintain that political hypocrisy is not something new. It's not something that's terrible, and there are times when you're forced to do it. So I think our Malay nationalist leaders have bought into the idea that once you go enter politics, you can't be too straight. You cannot, you know, just be too honest. You have to say some things just to please your constituency or to deceive the opponent. So both ways you use hypocritical methods and hypocritical behavior. And I am appalled by this double standards. Again, going back to Islamic ethics, and when we talk about Islamic ethics, Melissa, we have the prophetic role model as the example to be followed. Okay, and he is truthful, honest, sincere, humble, and working for the pleasure of God. So I would like to bring this idea back that Muslim political leaders have to really change the end of politics, not just for power for the party or power for the ethnic group, but a pleasure of the creator.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, Professor Kamal, but let's continue this conversation in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to Consider This. We will be right back. thanks so much for staying with Shraddh and I on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion with religious scholar, Emeritus Professor Tan Sri Muhammad Kamal Hassan, author of the recently published book, Corruption and Hypocrisy in Malay Muslim Politics, The Urgency of Moral Ethical Transformation. Now, Professor Kamal, in the first part of the conversation, we talked about the first part of the title of the book, which is Corruption and Hypocrisy in Malay Muslim Politics. Let's move on to the transformation part, the urgency of moral ethical transformation, as you put in your book. I'm just wondering, when you talk about the need to create a new breed of leaders who are not corrupt, where is this transformation going to come from? I mean, but short of political will to change this really entrenched patronage politics system, where is the solution? Where is the transformation going to come from?
Okay, what I have tried to do in the book is to provide the paradigm of new leadership, okay, which I call the paradigm of prophetic or theocentric leadership. And now, the political actors will have to play their role. And I did not say that all political actors are corrupt. There are some who are not corrupt, and I expect the non-corrupt political actors to consider seriously how to bring about this paradigm shift within their own political organizations. Then there are NGOs, which are non-partisan. I expect them also to take this up. And then there are also universities, IIUM, we have other partners in this, academics who are very concerned about this. Then you have youth organizations. So I expect many civic or civil society organizations to really get together. I'm just one lone voice, an old man, an old voice. So I expect the young people to get together, or work in concert, so that at the end of the day, each group will be working towards the new breed of leaders using the new paradigm, because the old paradigm has failed. The old paradigm is Machiavellian. The old paradigm is based on
I can jump in there. You know, when you talk about a kind of Muslim leader that, you know, with humility, one often thinks about Nick Aziz, who was the former, you know, spiritual leader of PAS and also Menteri Besar of Kelantan. And, you know, in Clive Kessler's book on Kelantan as a state, he begins with, UMNO trying to bribe the electorate with development. And, you know, and he says pointedly how the Kelantanese rejected this moral worldview, the worldview of development in exchange for you know, votes and so on and so forth. But things have changed dramatically, haven't they, Professor? PAS is no longer the PAS of Nick Aziz. It's no longer a leadership with humility. So where are the political counterpoints to the kinds of politics that you characterize that people see still entrenched in UMNO today?
Well, I think when things get worse, and I do not know what's going to happen in G15, but I do hope that the younger generation, the minority of Malay politicians who are very concerned about ethical values and moral values, not necessarily another Nick Abdul Aziz, but I would like to see, you know, more of this new leaders, young leaders who are concerned about corruption and integrity, and they want to bring in the model of leaders with integrity, the new breed of leaders. So I think that I am optimistic, but time is you know, I will need more time. I don't think things can happen in just a matter of a few years.
I was just about to say, I'm just wondering how quickly this transformation can happen, because you talked about corruption and hypocrisy as a cancer, a moral decay to the point where it's become cancerous and we really need to do something to address this. But again, the solutions are not easy. Superficial solutions may not work, and the kind of true transformation may take a very long time. Is this something that we might only see generations from now, that they may not be short-term wins for today's Malaysian?
Hopefully not too far away, but certainly not a matter of a few years, because you need, at the end of the day, you need a critical mass, and not just a few individuals here and there. You know, even we have the palace also addressing this issue. But I think you need that groundswell, you know, to happen, and that could happen, you know, after, say, if G15 is still bringing back the same old corrupt stuff, then I think the younger generation, where are the young people? I would like them to see taking up this ethical jihad, you know, to bring about the change that the Muslim community needs. So
Professor Kamal, but is your message exclusively to the Malay Muslim of Malaysia, considering that Malay Muslims and Muslims in general constitute only about 60% of the population? Isn't there a need for a larger message that goes beyond the Malay Muslim community?
Yeah, this is, of course, because I deal with the corruption of the Malay political group, but the message is universal. But I would like the Malays to take this up, and I if you read the last in my conclusion, I talk about it would be a sign of stupidity to increase the number of Malay parties. I would like to see a decrease in the number of parties, an increase in the in moral ethical consciousness, and then the new breed of leaders, Sharad, are going to be really multiracial, not monopolized by one ethnic group anymore. So I would like to see an Iban Muslim, Kadazan Muslim, an Indian Muslim, and Chinese Muslim working together for the sake of Malaysia as a whole. So that is my vision of the future, and I believe it is possible, but we have to go beyond this, you know, the ethnic identity politics first. But as I said, I still believe there are some well-meaning, sincere politicians who can work together. In fact, I was thinking one scenario is you have two parties for the Malays, one that has an agenda for say for one particular ethnic group, but the other one is sort of multiracial and Malaysian focus and sharing of power. We already have sharing of power, but it's not really real sharing. Yeah? So we hope that in the future we can have a real sharing of power, not based on religion, but based on universal ethnic moral values.
All right, Professor, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and congratulations on the book. Hopefully that it will get this conversation moving and there's some traction, and it will generate a new breed of leaders, as you've put it. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you very much, Melissa and Sharad.
That was our conversation with Emeritus Professor Tansri Muhammad Kamal Hassan, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.